You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at SB Nation's Fear the Sword. On today's show, I'm joined by the former site manager at Fear the Sword and at the Athletics, and currently athletic writer David Zavok, to talk about Tristan Thompson, who David just wrote about for the Athletic. You can find that piece titled, "The Cavs Have a Tristan Thompson Problem, But It's Not What You Think," in the show notes. David, thanks for coming on.
Hey, happy to be here. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we chatted at the game last night. Before we get into the basketball stuff, you said you went to Bakersfield for the first time in Cleveland. In terms of the Cleveland taco places you've been to, where does Bakersfield rank for you? Like, was it worth the trip to Ohio City?
Yeah, it was good. I think Barrio's kind of fun because you can kind of pick and choose what you want. But then you sort of have the ability to mess that up. So Bakersfield sort of gives you some pretty good options. So both of the tacos I had were pretty good. So I was happy.
Barrio's, I think, the king, but Bakersfield's better than like Socalo. Shouts to the people in Cleveland that have like eaten at all these taco places we're referencing. But Tristan Thompson, I think, is you're kind of the perfect Tristan Thompson person to talk to, because I think you have a appreciation for Tristan that I think some people, particularly right now on Cavs Twitter and discussing the Cavs, don't really have. I think he's been frustrating this year. I think especially earlier in the year he's been a frustrating guy. His numbers are a little bit down. I know his net rating has been pretty abysmal. I think for the first part of the year, he certainly didn't look like himself physically for whatever reason. We'll get into that a little bit. But for you, when you look at him right now, what to you, if there's anything, feels different about him right now versus the 2016 finals or when you would say he was at his best? Is this a guy that's beat down by all the minutes he's played? Because, I mean, frankly, I don't have the time stamp on this article, but it doesn't feel like we're that far removed from that Zach Lowe piece that just outlines why Tristan Thompson is valuable even in this NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing, I mean, I think if you go back to this time last year, I was thinking about him as like an all defense candidate, maybe not first team, but he was a really impactful defender for the first two thirds of last season. And whether it's something with the knee or, you know, just general getting worn down, he wasn't very good at the end of the regular season last year. He wasn't very good in the playoffs last year outside of his series against the Celtics. And, you know, he came to camp and didn't really seem to be healthy there. And people around the team were kind of talking about that. And then he actually got hurt. And a lot of people thought it was a blessing in disguise because it would give him time to rest the real issue, which people were speculating was his knee. And he's come back, and I think he's looked a little bit better than at the start of the season, whether it's just an in-shape thing, whether the knee really is bothering him. I don't know. I think energy-wise, when he's had the ability to get rest in between games, I think he's looked a little bit better. But he consistently has not had the same sort of athleticism that he had as recently as a year and a half ago. Now, that could be attributed to a specific injury. He's played a lot of minutes in a short amount of time. You know, I think we forget his nickname when he came into the league was Tigger, because he was an athletic, bouncy sort of guy, and he doesn't look anything like that right now. So I don't know. There are people who think, you know, did he forget how to defend? Is he not executing the right stuff consistently, willfully? I don't know, but I doubt that he forgot how to play basketball, but he does seem a step slower.
Looking up that Loeb piece, it was a lot sooner than I realized. It was written with the date of May 30th of 2017. That is a lot closer than I would have guessed, just based on how he's looked. I think I think you're right in saying that he's not as bouncy as he was. And I think right now, at least, and look, thinking mostly about that Spurs game that we just watched and how he looked in person defending a guy the caliber of LaMarcus Aldridge, I do think he looks better right now post that month he was hurt compared to the start of the season. I think at the start of the season, he looked very kind of dead in the water. He didn't look comfortable for whatever reason. I think the idea that the minutes, the playing in the several straight finals and being that Iron Man, remember, this is a guy that until last season played in every single game for years and was just incredibly durable, played heavy minutes, was not someone that was taking days off or anything like that. Even though he was young, that wears on you, and particularly when you're a bigger guy that's carrying more weight. That is going to happen, and we know from the Warriors, you know, from their runs to dating back to the 90s, teams that make these consistent final runs have guys that get worn down. LeBron is the exception to the rule. Guys like Tristan Thompson, guys like J.R. Smith, when they play in several straight finals like this, their bodies are going to get worn down. And if Tristan had stuff that was nagging him and he just is getting it fixed, it makes total sense in my head that athletically he's just not quite where he was because of the wear and tear and just the recovery time. I also think one of the reasons I think people are so frustrated with him is because what the stuff he's supposed to be really good at, he has not consistently done well. I think the Spurs game where he had the 9 offensive rebounds in the first quarter, the 9 rebounds in the first quarter, one short of his career high for a quarter, was the kind of the Tristan you've been looking for. He was defending post-ups very well. He was doing okay, handing out in space, but he hasn't been as good as stepping out on guards, as rebounding, as grabbing offensive boards. And when that happens, I think the stuff that he's always sort of struggled at, the little floaters he goes for that doesn't make, the lack of a jump shot that can keep guys honest to the elbow. We don't really see that passing that he kind of flashed last year out of the pick and roll anymore. That's something that we have, I think, barely seen this year to shooters in the corner and on the edge. I think the stuff that he's just lacking at when he's not doing the stuff he's supposed to be great at, I think it makes people look at him even harsher. And yes, he struggled, but I don't know if it says doom and gloom, you can't play Tristan Thompson anymore, as some people like to argue.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll go back and roundabout get to your point. I think people also forget last year was his first year as a full-time starter. And there is a whole history of players, 18-minute wonders, if you want to call them, at the center position. And this isn't a new thing. Like, Jerome James parlayed, like, 3 playoff games into like $60 million for the Knicks 10 years ago, or probably longer than that now. But, you know, the Plumleys, at one point I had like a whole list of all of the players who everybody said was definitely better than Tristan Thompson at one point in time, because they had excelled at a bench role and maybe they had good rim protection numbers, or maybe they were good pick and roll finishers for a while. And everybody was 100% certain that they were upgrades on Tristan Thompson or better than Tristan Thompson. And whether it was because of a high foul rate or because they couldn't handle, you know, the grind of playing the center position for 30 plus minutes every night or whatever, a lot of them have fallen by the wayside. And I think, like, you know, one of the benefits of Tristan for a long time was he didn't really get hurt. You could play him 29, 30 minutes a game, and you sort of knew what you were going to get. It wasn't going to be great, but, like, he wasn't going to foul out. He wasn't going to sort of take anything off the table because his usage was so low. And I think it just sort of caught up to him. And I would be willing to bet that if you moved Tristan to a 17 or 18 minute a night role, mostly playing against bench units, as opposed to now when he pretty much only plays against starters at the beginning of the game, you'd go back to seeing some pretty good numbers. And I think it's fair to even then look at it another way, which is that, okay, let's say we put Larry Nance in the starting lineup. Can Larry Nance play 32 minutes a game? Can Larry Nance play 30 minutes against starting centers I think the last time I saw, he was averaging something like 6 fouls per 36 minutes or something like
that.
Well,
and he just played like 19 minutes or something like that against the Spurs. I think I have that number wrong, but he didn't play a ton, and he's a very aggressive guy. He picks up ticky-tacky fouls. He is what he is, and I think he's really useful, and we're going to talk about whether he should start over Tristan or not and how Tristan might take that. But I think you're right. Like, he is someone that, like, his effectiveness, maybe it's best in small doses. Maybe that aggression is best used right now in smaller doses, and especially when you think about Kevin Love coming back. Like, there's another guy that's going to play a lot of minutes, maybe play some five. That's going to eat into Tristan and Nance's minutes as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other thing about it is, at the center position today, with how quick the league is, and again, it's crazy because just a year and a half ago, Tristan Thompson was, you know, sort of known for his athleticism, but the line between being really effective and unplayable is razor thin. Look at Timofey Mozgov, right? I mean, Mozgov, before he slowed down even just a half step, was an extremely valuable rim protector and rim runner. Loses a half step, and we spent, you know, months begging for Ty Lue to bench Timofey Mozgov and start Tristan Thompson and play Channing Frye at center, right? So we've seen this movie before, just with a different center. We did it before that with Tristan Thompson, or we did it before with Anderson Varejao. So Anderson Varejao was starting. We wanted Tristan Thompson to start, but instead they traded for Timofey and basically got, you know, Varejao got hurt and left the lineup. So whether it was Varejao, whether it was Mozgov, and hopefully not, but maybe Tristan, the line between being able to defend and being just a tad step slow and ineffective is razor thin, and it happens sort of before you'd think it would.
Before we get to the Nance Tristan bit, did anything Tristan say after the game against the Spurs where I think he was a little, you could tell he was a little bit annoyed for whatever reason, and it comes off a week where he had a interesting guy, like he had a kind of public back and forth on the bench with Mike Longobardi, who's the defensive coach in the Wizards game, and he had kind of a weird performance against the Grizzlies in some areas. Did you take anything that he said to you kind of stand out? He was kind of defensive of how he's played, I think, more than anything was what I took away from it.
Well, and it wasn't maybe the best question for me. He can be a little prickly in general, but, you know, I asked him if the Spurs did anything in the second half to, and I wasn't really trying to comment on his effectiveness, but I wanted to know because other teams have in the past, especially with how effective he was rebounding in that first quarter. I asked him if the Spurs had done anything to adjust and try and take away some of his rebounding opportunities, and he said no, not at all, and basically just sort of pointed to if his rebounds went down in the second half, it was because he didn't play in the second half, and you know, pointed out he didn't play in the fourth quarter. And, you know, whether it was Nance or whether it was Tristan, I think they probably really could have used him against LaMarcus Aldridge in that fourth quarter. But
he certainly would have been better than Jeff Green defending LaMarcus Aldridge post-ups. Like, I think universally people should just look at that and look at how Tristan did against him and be like, yes, like, I know what Lou was trying to say with the lineups, but, like, Tristan Thompson's going to do a better job against LaMarcus Aldridge. And Jeff, no offense to Jeff Green, Jeff Green does not unlock, because he's just not a shooter and a floor spacer, he does not unlock the type of devastation with small ball that could run LaMarcus off the floor. That's not what he is. And that's where Tristan, I think, has a lot of value in that situation, and so does Nance.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't want to speculate too much, but, you know, I don't know how thrilled he is with his, you know, with the playing time moving forward. But, you know, he's kind of got to earn it. So he hasn't been very good. The team hasn't defended when he's been on the floor. I've seen people speculate he plays so many of his minutes with J.R. Smith, who's been a disaster, that it's sort of hard to separate them. And I think on Sunday against the Spurs, I certainly would point to J.R. as being more of a problem than Tristan. But, you know, at a certain point, the team just isn't really performing when Tristan's been on the court, and that is some kind of reflection on him. So I don't know. It's an interesting situation. I don't have an answer. I think the most interesting thing is when we do focus on Tristan, we get really upset about his inability to catch or his inability to shoot. But the simple fact of the matter is the Cavs over the last few years have been pretty good usually when Tristan's on the court. Now that's usually because he plays a lot with LeBron James, but if Tristan's hurting the Cavs, I don't really think it's offensively. I think it's just that he's a step slow defensively right now.
He might really benefit from a summer off, and maybe that's kind of what it would take for him to get rejuvenated. And I don't know necessarily if they're going to get that because he's probably playing until June. Maybe Nance takes some of the load off of him. I'd have to go back and look at his box scores, like in terms of how much he's playing last couple finals. But even when he certainly I think played more of the first finals. You know, when Love wasn't there and it was him and basically him and Timo kind of running things there. Looking at him and Nance. Nance, I think, has kind of caught everyone's imagination for nostalgic reasons, for athleticism reasons. You pointed out something that I'm gonna let you say specifically about the minutes and their respective ages. But what do you think? Do you think starting Larry Nance and inserting him, assumedly next to Kevin Love and Kevin Love is back, do you think that would actually make a difference for either guy or improve the Cavs in any real way?
I'm looking it up real quick. I just want to get Larry Nance's foul rate per 36 minutes here. Over his career, which is brief, per 36, over his career, it hasn't been as bad as it is this year. Since he came to Cleveland, it's only five games, but he's averaging 6.6 personal fouls per 36 minutes in Cleveland. Over his career, he's at about four fouls per 36 minutes, but it's been ticking up this season pretty dramatically. That's not that bad. So I don't know. You could do that. I've seen a lot of people say that maximizing Larry Nance's time with LeBron James would be a good thing. I think that's pretty much true for every Cavs player. But you know, I'd be curious to see how Nance would hold up physically, if he was asked to play 28 minutes per game against starting centers, over the course of a season. I think that would be pretty tough for him. I could be wrong, he's listed at 6'9", 230. I don't know that those are really accurate on either one. I would probably say he's probably closer to 6'7", than 6'9", but I could be wrong. He's been really effective off the bench. He's been more effective than Tristan. I think his optimal role would be 22 minutes off the bench in an energy role, but I think that's Tristan's optimal role as well. So if you can do it either way, and the Cavs are in a position where they can, maybe mix and match a little bit, it's hard for me to see them making that move. But if Tristan really is hurt and not effective, then maybe it's something you have to consider. So I'm probably a little less inclined to do it than maybe most people would. But if Tristan continued to struggle, I think you'd almost have to look at it. The other option they could look at it when Kevin Love comes back, they've played Kevin Love at center for a lot of the year. Kevin Love at center, if you have Rodney Hood and Chetty Osmond starting, is a lot different than Kevin Love at center with a really struggling J.R. Smith and an Isaiah Thomas turnstile. So maybe Kevin Love starting at center is a little bit more palatable with some of the upgrades around him. So, who knows?
I think the Love at center thing is interesting because we saw the Cavs go away from it at a point. Like, there was a thing they did a lot of, and then they just kind of stopped using it very much. And I understand why they did that. I think once Isaiah came back, it just kind of became complicated. And some of the other things you were doing, I think it became complicated to do it. And there's severe defensive limitations with it. But I look at who the Cavs are gonna face, really, and Toronto has bigs, but they can go pretty small. And Love at the five would be interesting against if they close with Valanciunas or Ibaka or Pirtle or whoever they close with. The vibe with OG Anunoby or CJ Miles kind of sliding down into that four spot. Boston can play a little bit smaller, but they also have Greg Monroe. So like Tristan Thompson, if they try to use Monroe a lot, maybe matters more there. Nance against a guy that size, I think you're right. Like that could be a physical issue for him. And I think Tristan has a track record of doing very well against Al Horford. We're a couple playoff series deep of Tristan doing very well against a guy like that. Anything Houston and Golden State do to me is going to be really complicated because I think those two teams are just so clearly better than everybody right now, and I think that's very clear. I don't know how I stand on this because I don't know if there's a rush for me to change the starting lineup right now. Because Kevin Love is out, because you're missing your second best player, the guy that maybe could unlock some different offensive sets, has to develop chemistry with Clarkson, with Hood, with Nance, with George Hill. I kind of think you need to see I think you just need to get to Kevin Love being back and then kind of figure it out. And maybe starting Nance now, you just jumpstart to that process and people get used to it. So when Kevin Love comes back, you're optimizing it. But I think there's going to be changes and uncomfortable movements and rotations and stuff when Kevin comes back. That's why when his return date is, I think, matters so much. But I think Nance starting could make a lot of sense. I don't know. I don't know if it's something that changes very much. I think we know something about Lou. He's probably going to close with the guy who's playing better anyway. And he just hasn't always been willing to go back to Tristan. And I think if Nance comes off the bench, I don't think that rules him out from closing the game. That ultimately matters, I think, more than if he starts or not.
Yeah, and I think the biggest issue is that they need to break this habit of finishing Jeff Green in these games. So I think the biggest issue is that with some of these new additions, Ty Lue has better options than he had before. And I think if he's going to point to Jeff Green finishing games at center because of quickness and athleticism and spacing, that's not good enough. So I am worried that, Kevin Love somehow ends up on the bench at the end of games with Larry Nance next to him. And I think it's fair to, like, worry about, team speed when you're playing, multiple bigs. But if you were looking for offense and quickness and athleticism yesterday, as they were, trying to come back, Jeff Green is not the answer when you have Larry Nance on your team. So, I think they could have finished with either Tristan if they were just, looking for a LaMarcus Aldridge matchup, even though it seemed like, Nance was doing a pretty good job on him. I'm just saying I wouldn't have criticized that. I wouldn't have criticized finishing with Larry Nance, even though he did pick up a couple fouls, I guess. They just, whatever it takes to break them away from, thinking Larry, Jeff Green is the answer, because smart teams are just going to slice them, slice them up. And that's what the Spurs did in the fourth quarter yesterday.
I'll say this about Jeff Green. I think the idea of Jeff Green is great. And I think like the idea that he's the Cavs' best option to have someone that has some size that can allow Bron to like play the five. The problem is he's Jeff Green. He's a below average NBA player who teams are not going to respect from the 3-point line. He was a big problem in the Wizards game when they couldn't close anything out, when he missed some threes late in that game. He missed a three late in the Spurs game when they just didn't even bother chasing him out to the wing. His value comes from post-ups in an NBA where post-ups are, especially for a marginal rotation guy, just aren't as valuable. He deserves credit for some good defensive performances from getting to the free throw line. I think he has some value in the rotation. I don't think he should be closing games. And I think that tactical issue was one. I think Lou's probably, in my mind, Lou's biggest mistake of the game was not putting back Tristan, not putting back in Larry Nance. One of those two guys should have closed that game, and splitting them in and somehow just some version of not Jeff Green. I don't know how, but the problem is, like, Jeff Green has some value because LeBron at the five is really hard to guard, especially if you have all the shooting now. I don't know, and when you look ahead to the summer, I have no idea how they upgrade on Jeff Green. Maybe it has to come via, like, the Nets pick. Maybe it has to come on swinging for the fences. There's that certain guy in OKC that would have been perfect for that role, but that's not really doable at this point. Like, they need something in that type of vein, because that I think if they had someone better to do what Jeff Green's being asked to do, the Tristan issue, the Larry Nance issue, this conversation maybe isn't as big of a deal, and maybe that solves it, because they'd be able to play a little bit smaller and not be as reliant on guys that are playing the five spot.
No, it's possible. You know, they can look at Rodney Hood. Frankly, they have LeBron James. That should maybe be a little bit more open to doing that. You know, if we want to talk about...
If LeBron is willing to do that, that solves your issues. But I think we've kind of seen they... Either he's not willing to do it right now because it's the regular season, or they're not willing to ask him to do it. And that's something we're going to have to see if that changes come April, May, June. But right now, it doesn't seem like that's, like, on the table at all.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I think, you know, they have so much depth on this team right now. I think the main, you know, focus on the offseason will be, you know, going from B-minus players to A-minus players. And even if they can't find another star, you know, coming close to it. So, you know, right now they're playing with one star. They'll get Kevin Love back and they'll be at two. I think they need to focus on trying to get back to 2.5 stars. And, you know, maybe they use the Brooklyn pick for a draft pick, maybe they use it to upgrade, and maybe they can get that player that way. But you know, we'll have to wait and see. I don't think they're gonna get it, you know, I don't think they're gonna get the player to fulfill that role, you know, with a minimum salary or close to it like Jeff Green has.
You're not getting that player that you kind of need, I think, that's just not the climate we live in basketball. Isn't asking Hood to, that's an interesting option. I almost am more interested in seeing what the starting lineup would look like if he started and was there to supplement with some ball handling with LeBron. I think that would be kind of interesting, something that they haven't really asked him to do. Dave, we'll wrap it up on this. When you look at Tristan, when you project out for Tristan Thompson this season, when you look at what you kind of think he's going to be doing in the playoffs once this team assumedly gets back to full health and Kevin Love's back and the rotation settles, what is your ideal role for Tristan Thompson? Like, what do you make sense for him?
It would be great if he could play 26 minutes a game, and, you know, in the playoffs have a little bit of time in between games to rest up, and, you know, Ty Lue could, you know, pick and choose based on matchups who's going to close the games. And so he'd be playing 26 minutes a game. Larry Nance would be playing 22 minutes a game, and Larry Nance would be, you know, running second units with LeBron. I think that's the best case scenario. But Tristan's going to have to play a little bit better. And if he's not, then I think you can look at starting Larry. But I think what I would guess would happen would be that they would go back to Kevin Love in the starting lineup. The problem with Kevin Love starting at center is then you've got Nance and Tristan coming off the bench, and that's a tricky proposition as well. So we'll see how it goes. I think, you know, if you're looking for optimism, Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson have been pretty good together in the past, especially when they're with LeBron James. So maybe that duo starts playing better together again. That being said, they've been good together against every team except for the Golden State Warriors. So it's optimism, but it's also, you know, where it leads, I don't exactly know.
I think you're right. I think the type of pairing I want to see, and it's going to be hard to kind of live by this kind of binary logic that I'm going to, or the just kind of straightforward description I'm going to say, because once they get to the playoffs, LeBron James is playing 40 minutes a night and more, right? Like that's going to be a thing. So you're going to be hard pressed to just find minutes where this sort of works in a vacuum. But I like Tristan. If LeBron's playing the four in particular, I like Tristan in there as kind of a bully ball five to do some of that dirty work to clean up some of LeBron's, the things he's not going to really have the energy or the focus to necessarily do, because he's just going to have to do so much other stuff. So I like Tristan kind of in that role as the five next to LeBron at the four. I like Nance next to Love in certain ways, because I think it allows you to maybe put – it's easier, I think, because Nance will be more comfortable on the perimeter than Tristan at this point and can kind of cover some more ground. It's easier to kind of put Kevin Love at whoever's going to be hanging around more inside. So if that's the Warriors, maybe that's easier to put him against Zaza. Or against Toronto – and they're playing a little bit smaller, maybe Nance can go out there and look, like, if the Raptors are going to try to take advantage of attacking Kevin Love with Jonas Valanciunas, think the Cavs would be okay with that. Like, that is a proposition you're probably comfortable with. So that's kind of what I feel. I think both their minutes probably should be around in the 20, kind of even, maybe, depending on how Tristan plays. If Tristan gets better, I think he could earn some more. I think the opportunities for one of them to certainly go ahead of the other guy. But I think we have to see how they look with Kevin Love, how Kevin Love looks when he gets back. And I think how much Kevin Love plays as a five will say a lot about both guys. Because you're right, bringing them off the bench, both off the bench, to me, just is way too complicated. They can't play together. There's no world where I think you can play Larry Nance and Tristan Thompson together. And that means I think one of them has to start. And I'd be very curious to see how Tristan would take coming off the bench. He said he was okay with it earlier this season. Would he, who's been around this team for this long, has put in the work for the organization and for Ty Lue and for LeBron, would he accept that for a new guy? That would be really interesting to me, just to kind of see too that dynamic. I don't know, but I'd be curious. And I think Tristan's not a top three thing for me the rest of the year in terms of what I'm kind of working on and thinking about, but he's probably top five in terms of what he looks like. It's gonna be interesting, because we just, if he's bad, that leaves the Cavs with one guy down, and they already are going to have some really kind of complicated decisions on the end of the roster when it comes to the playoff rotation anyway. They have 11 guys that they're talking about playing, and all of the guys on the edge sort of have issues. And if Tristan can get himself out of that fringe that has these liabilities, that would be a big win for Ty Lue.
Well said.
Thank you so much for coming on. When you look at that Spurs game real quick, anything that that just happened in that game, aside from it, was it as simple as them just missing a lot of shots, do you think? Is that just the theme of this team right now, that when they're not making threes, they're just going to look worse?
Yeah, they just have a lot of role players. It's hard to expect role players to consistently show up, but you'd think at least one of them would. It just didn't really happen. But I do think they have to find ways to get Rodney Hood involved and get him more opportunities, and I think they know that, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think you'll continue to see them run that play where he's coming around a screen and then sets up at the top of the key and gets, I think they're going to see more and more of that going forward. But that'll be it for today's show. You can find David on Twitter at David Zavok. I'll be back tomorrow with a recap of Cavs Nets as well as a mailbag, so you'll have that there. It will be a TBD guest from Quicken Loans Arena on Tuesday. If the Cavs win, helps the Nets pick and kind of improves their staying in the Eastern Conference. So kind of a duly important game. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CDimmonWrites. Find the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. Have a good Tuesday. Talk to you tomorrow.